Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Joe Donahue.
And I'm Ian Pickus.
Our next guest is one of the comedy world's most recognizable voices.
Literally.
Oh, there's a big surprise. That's an incredible... I think I'm going to have a heart attack and die from that surprise.
Gilbert Gottfried has been working as a stand-up since his teens, and in addition to a life spent in comedy clubs, he's been a fixture on screen from SNL and Letterman to Aladdin, Problem Child, and his scene-stealing sets at Comedy Central's Celebrity Roasts.
Gilbert Gottfried brings his ribald stand-up act to our region this weekend when he takes the stage at the Paramount Theater in Middletown Saturday at 8 p.m.
Gilbert Gottfried, welcome to the Roundtable. It's great to have you here.
Well, that not only works as my introduction, but also my obituary.
If you had to guess, when do you think your obituary will be employed?
Well, I don't know. Hopefully I'll just keep coming back to life and eating human flesh. And
it's worked so far?
Yes.
How many dates do you do a year?
Way too many, if you ask the audience.
Has that always been the way? Like, do you feel when you go out, and I have seen you many times, and I love being in that crowd, but are you still in a place where you're winning them over?
Yeah, it depends. Sometimes you've got them at the beginning. Other times you got to win them over. And other times a riot breaks out.
How has your Twitter account changed the way fans interact with you or even come to see you at the club?
Well, now I apologize for everything.
That's kind of what I was getting at.
Yeah. It's like now if someone says, hey, I enjoy you, and I go, thank you, and I apologize if that thank you offended you in any way. Twitter turned out to be a very expensive hobby.
You mean because you lost the Aflac commercials after something on Twitter?
Oh, yeah, because they fired me, hired a new guy to imitate my voice for less money, thus bringing closure to a horrible tragedy.
How, first of all, no one can do a perfect imitation of that voice, number one. So it sounds different. But I assume that was a gig that paid some pretty good money, right?
Yeah, of course, anything to me is good money. Yeah. If I find a penny on the sidewalk, I'm celebrating.
I read that you never had a driver's license, so did you find it ironic to be doing car insurance?
And plus I believe it helps your driving if you have a couple of drinks beforehand to steady your nerves.
Why wouldn't they want you as their spokesman?
Yeah.
Did you find it odd though, given that here you had done this work for Disney, you had landed the job, there was certainly nobody who knew you that didn't know that you had said outrageous things in the past. That was what I didn't understand about the controversy.
It seemed like a convenient shock. It was kind of like in Casablanca where the guy goes, I'm shocked to find gambling going on here. And that's what it seemed like to me, because they were shocked that someone, I guess they never see me on stage, on the radio, on TV, at a roast, saw the Aristocrats, heard my Dirty Joke DVD, none of that.
Because, and you're right about the roast, I mean, anybody who had just seen you on Comedy Central... Or really anything that you've done of who you are and what your material is, I don't think could be all that surprised.
Yeah, it seemed like a convenient firing at the time. People can pick and choose when to be shocked by things, I think.
In your history in the comedy clubs, was there a point where people didn't get offended in that kind of 21st century way that people now get offended?
Now it's like every day someone pops up and they're the new villain because of something they said. And it's like, I think, like, you know, way back when, like, the Rat Pack with Sinatra and Dean Martin and would be doing jokes about Sammy Davis Jr., it's like now they would go, oh, that's so racist. And, you know, Dean Martin and Frank Sinatra should be punished for that, even though Sammy Davis was enjoying it.
There was always a time where you could get away with things in a comedy club that you couldn't on television, that you couldn't on the radio, and it was a very free space. And you know, you look at somebody like Michael Richards, who goes off in a comedy club, and assuming, and not to defend him, but to say, okay, well, here he is in this space. And then somebody is recording it goes out on YouTube, and his career is essentially ruined for that period of time. So does that change? Do you have a trust of the audience like you used to have?
Yeah, it's funny. It used to be like at one point Big Brother is watching you.
Yeah.
And then it became like during like the 60s and 70s, oh, you know, the government, the CIA is watching every, and it's, and it, what it turned out to be is everybody's watching everybody.
So it hasn't had an effect on you. It hasn't had an effect on what you say in a club, or if you find it funny and you think the audience will enjoy it, it doesn't affect your material in any way.
Yeah, like people say, do you think twice about what you say? And I always think, well, I think twice about it, but I do it anyway. And it has become a like, I don't think Don Rickles could have a career now. Because now everything he said, people would be going, oh, my God, what an offensive thing he just came out with.
Right. And now he's at the point where he is an icon and an idol to so many people that nobody says anything.
Yeah, but, you know, if he was starting now, I think people would be going, oh, my God, what
right.
did he say? He said the Chinese guy in the third row?
But that doesn't keep you from commenting about that guy in the third row.
No. That's why I usually hire a Chinese guy to sit in the third row. See, unlike Rickles, who would pretend there was a Chinese guy, I like to be a little more authentic.
A lot of overhead in your act.
I travel around with one Chinese guy, one black guy, and one Mexican guy to actually sit in the audience. So I could go, hey, the Chinese guy in the third row, and what about the Mexican in the fifth row? And hey, that black guy in the first row.
You know, both Ian and I are fans of the Howard Stern Show, and we, of course, you are a fixture on that program. And one of the things that they play regularly on that is you doing your bit as a cantor, which is one of the funniest things I've ever heard in my life.
It's from the times that I've been to Temple, even though I'm a bad Jew. I think Christina Aguilera is doing a version of that. Next
I don't know how you could tell, but sure, that's very nice. And did you find that as a kid sitting there? Did you find that funny at the time?
Yeah. There were all those things that just sort of stuck with me. I mean, it like stuff you become fascinated by. Like the other thing that always fascinated me when I was a kid, like they had the Marx Brothers movies on that I became a big fan of. They used to show them a lot. And then I started to see Groucho popping up on like the Dick Cavett Show.
Right.
And he was there and he was old and slow and weak. And he used to talk like this. He used to say, you know, when I was working on the night of the opera, it was And so even as a kid, I started doing the old senile crowd show.
I remember when he used to come out and do that, my mother would say, I just feel so sorry for him. It seems like there's someone forcing him to do that, and he would rather just be home.
Yeah, and it turned out, I guess it was that Aaron Fleming that was forcing him. He had that younger girlfriend or whatever she was, and it really, yeah, that was, I also felt that way when James Cagney popped up after being retired for like 50 years. And it was like, first he was in Ragtime, which he was like passable in. You know, you wouldn't say, oh boy, this Cagney is great if you hadn't seen him before. You go, oh, passable character actor. And then he did this other movie. I forget the name of it. But he played a TV movie where he played a retired prize fighter. And that was scary for all the wrong reasons. Because I think some of it had his voice and other sections, because he was so hard to understand, they brought in like Rich Little or someone.
To make him sound more like Cagney.
Yeah, because, like, there's some scenes where it's obviously Cagney talking, and it's like, it's almost like that Groucho sound, but that Cagney-esque, you know, where it's like, oh, yeah, this is me, you rash. And then, you know, they'd bring in, like, Rich Little, and he'd be sounding like the young Cagney, like on, you know, on that.
Well, talking about voice impressions and so on, I mean, people always wonder, is this your actual speaking voice?
No, actually, if you met me on the street, I sound just like Liam Neeson.
It's been a good career move, though.
You know, I asked you, I started off with this, but asking you about winning people over in a club setting. And do you feel that it's still the same? Like when you come to Middletown and you're at the Paramount, you will have diehard rabid fans, but then you will also have people there who don't quite get it. Is that safe to say?
Yeah. It is a weird thing when you're up there on stage, because it's like there are the people who just, you know, love you immediately, and then there are the people who are just like staring at you.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, I always feel like there's certain people in the audience where I feel like walking up going, you know, you could leave at any point.
There's nothing keeping you there.
Yeah. If you're that tortured by it, go out and take a walk or something.
You're very well known for being one of the best tellers of the Aristocrats, and I wonder if you remember the first time you heard that joke.
Yeah, I remember. I think I remember like some guy telling me it, and it's like I don't remember now if it was, you know, because it's been under a few names, so he might have said it as the Sophisticados, which is another way, another punchline. But, yeah, I remember hearing that, and I also remember, like, at one point, I was telling that to someone, and this other guy loved the joke, and he said, oh, tell this other guy the joke, and I told it, and I kept telling the joke, and each time it was a little different, and this guy said to me, he goes, you know, it would be hysterical, a film of you just saying this joke over and over again in different ways, just the Aristocrats. And I remember thinking, what an idiot.
But Pet and Gillette listened, and there you go.
Yeah, and he got me to do it for free, which made it his greatest magic trick.
What I think is interesting, because you all started out basically at the same time, but, you know, you can't imagine Jerry Seinfeld telling that joke?
A family walks into a television service. And the father and mother is having sex. And the little girl is having sex. And then the dog is having sex. What are you calling yourself? The aristocrats.
Or maybe you can't imagine that.
Yes.
Does Seinfeld have a Gilbert Gottfried? We have to find out.
That one I'd have to work on.
I'm interested in, though, because, like, do you long for that type of career? I mean, does every comedian sort of want that career? Or are you very happy where you are?
Well, I certainly wouldn't mind the Seinfeld money.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, he's got, there are certain people like that, like Seinfeld, where I think in 1,000 years from now, you know, some people will walk into a party and people will look at them and go, oh, those are the ones from the Seinfeld fortune.
But you're happy doing, I mean, the career that you have carved out, because, and I don't say that this with any disrespect, but I can't see you doing that type of show for 10 plus years.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, most people can't see me having a career longer than 5 minutes.
So how have you done it all this time?
I don't know. It's like a lot of things where I think at any point they're going to realize that the gig is up. I always feel like my career is like I'm at a party, and one day someone's going to walk over to me and go, excuse me, can we see your invitation, please? And then it'll all be over.
And meanwhile, the home life, everything's good?
Yes. I have two kids that I only beat when I'm on crystal meth.
Oh, that's good.
Yes.
As long as you have some boundaries, I guess.
And you enjoy the time when you're on the road. And anything special that Middletown should get ready for?
Yes, I'd be ready to sit there in the audience and watch like about a minute of it and then turn to each other and go, whose idea was it to see Gilbert Gottfried?
Well, Gilbert Gottfried will be at the Paramount Theater on Saturday, the 7th of December at 8 o'clock. You can find out more information by going to MiddletownParamount.com, MiddletownParamount.com.
Thank you. And while we're on a website, my website's GilbertGottfried.com, and my Twitter is @RealGilbert.
RealGilbert, @RealGilbert. Gilbert Gottfried, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir.
Oh, thank you.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.